Ah, there's the news. I mustn't miss that.
Coffee, Mrs. Davenport?
Two, please.
That was your son at dinner, wasn't it?
Yes.
This is the national program.
I do hope your boy wasn't being too difficult.
Reactions. No. Not at all, Mrs. Lubworthy.
I couldn't help overhearing a little. One tried not to, of course.
Of course.
But at that age, they are so loud-voiced. An awkward age, I always say. Don't you agree?
Not particularly. Excuse me, I want to listen to the news.
Germany, he said, was in no position to answer Mr. Henderson's appeal.
A queue, estimated by the police at several hundred, has already formed at the Central Criminal Courts, London, where tomorrow, April the 15th, George Alfred Wood and Alma Victoria Rattenbury face charges of the murder of Francis Mawson Rattenbury at the Villa Madeira, Bournemouth, in March of this year.
Oh, no.
Although the public gallery in court number one will only accommodate a fraction of the crowd now waiting.
The true criminal court, sir. There are three others, aren't there, besides court number one? What, dear? There are four courts at the Old Bailey, aren't there?
I don't know, my dear. I've always managed to stay clear of trouble.
Oh, God, let it not happen.
Linley, close all the windows and pull the blinds down now, please.
Yes, Wardress.
Oh, dear, I was so enjoying that little glimpse of London. You'll have it again, my dear, on the way back. We're only a few minutes from the Old Bailey, you see.
I know. I recognise the Strand, dear. Savoy Hotel and the Gaiety Theatre. Where do you think I've spent all my life? In a nunnery?
Hardly.
Oh, Joan, you are a scream. I love it when your mouth sets like that. Oh, dear. I'm ever so nervous. Do I look all right? They're bound to comment, aren't they? I mean, they always do. The prisoner was smartly dressed in a navy blue suit and close-fitting blue toque. Oh, I do wish they'd let me wear my pink pillbox. Of course, on the day they do the sentencing...
Don't talk about the sentencing. That's not going to happen.
Where do they put me during the trial? I mean, is there a room I'm taken to?
Yes, under the dock. It's quite comfortable. And you can have your meals sent in.
Will he be there?
Not in the same cell.
Good. I don't think I could have borne that.
Of course he'll be in the dock with you.
I know. I can face that. We won't have to speak. Whatever is that noise?
We're arriving, Miss. Look at that crowd. I never saw anything like it. They've got the mounted police out.
Better wait a minute, Johnston. Yes. The police have seen us. They're making a pass.
Why couldn't they have got us up here an hour earlier?
It wouldn't have made no difference, miss. This lot's been waiting all night. It's on the wireless.
Now, dear, you mustn't be nervous. You're not going to be hurt. The three of us will see to that. Not to mention about 50 policemen. Linley, when I give the signal, open that door.
Right, miss.
Not yet, though.
But why should they want to hurt me?
I've no idea. But you've got to be brave now.
Yes.
I know you are brave, my dear. I haven't been with you so long, I haven't cottoned on to that.
Well, I thought I was, but this is different.
All right, Linley. Now.
Right.
Linley, you ahead.
Yes, Miss.
Johnston behind.
Yeah, right.
You, dear, hold on to me. And close your ears, my dear.
Push, Linley.
Come on now.
Get out of the way, you old cow.
Come on.
Come on, you won't forget.
Come on.
You will. And I'll wallop you on the ground with your own hands out. You, call yourself a man? Ever looked at yourself naked in a long mirror and counted them? All right, dear. Only 2 yards to go. Push, Linley.
Come on.
Out of the way,
you fat bastard. You take your hands off, my man.
Come on, get back,
sir. There you are, dear. We're nearly through.
Bloody moron.
He's wearing on you, the officer. We'll say to you with knobs on you, old bitch.
Here we are, dear. I'm sorry. A cup of coffee will make you feel better.
Joan?
Yes.
Why?
Oh, it takes all sorts to make a world.
But why do they hate me?
Well, it's not the first time I've seen it. Never as bad, of course. But you know what I think it is? I think it's envy.
Why should they envy me now?
No, dear. They don't envy you now. We'll find ourselves, shall we?
Hello, Mr. Caswell.
Hello, Wood.
That big crowd out there, you know, when I arrived, some of them applauded.
Did they?
And one or two of them shouted, "Good luck, boy, we're on your side. And don't you worry, kid, we won't let you swing." Things like that.
I shouldn't set too much store by what they shout out there. It's what they're going to think in here that matters.
Still in awe, juries are made from people like those out there, aren't they?
I hope not, for the sake of justice. Those people out there are the dregs of humanity.
But still, they're human.
Hardly. We have only half an hour before you go on trial for your life. Are you still quite determined to instruct me that you committed this act of murder while under the influence of cocaine?
It feels good for a bloke like me to hear that word instruct. Yes, Mr. Caswell, KC, those are my instructions.
I am not a KC.
I'm still your client.
Yes.
Stupid odd job, boy, has come a long way, hasn't he? Instructing someone in striped trousers, stiff shirt and a morning coat. Yeah, well, I instruct you, Mr. Bloody Caswell, and anyone else who cares. I done the old boy in when I was crazed from a pernicious drug. Because there's no other way I could have done it. It wasn't me who did that thing, it was a dope fiend. Dope fiends, Mr. Caswell. Will you make a note of that?
I don't think I need to.
Make a note of it.
I have done so.
Just a minute. How is she?
I have no idea.
They're not going to find her guilty, are they?
I should think it very
probable. They say she's still trying to shield me.
I believe so.
Tell her not to. Tell her I can fight my own battle.
I shall do no such thing. And as for your battle, I'm the one who is going to fight it, not you.
Under my instructions.
I already have them. You were crazed from cocaine and were not responsible for your actions. I will see you in court.
Yes.
I would most strongly advise you not to go into the witness box.
Why not?
The prosecution have mustered a formidable array of experts on cocaine addiction, and I would not wish to submit you to the ordeal of explaining how, at the age of 8, you managed to become a dope fiend.
Ah, Mrs. Rattenbury, how are you feeling?
Oh, not too bad, Mr. O'Connor. Kind of you to come and see me. Well, we've got a nice day for it, haven't we?
I'm sorry you let those morons out there upset you.
I shouldn't have. It was silly. It's a free country, isn't it? If people feel like that, it's quite right for them to show it, I suppose. Only, I don't quite understand why they should feel like that. I mean, as strongly as that.
No. Well, our jury will be quite different, I know.
Will it? Well, it doesn't matter much, does it?
Yes, it does. The case against you is all surmise. They will say that because you were 20 years older than Wood, that you must have dominated him.
Dominated? Oh, that's a laugh if they knew. It was he who dominated me because he was 20 years younger.
That's a good point, and I shall make it. But, Mrs. Rattenbury, I repeat that the prosecution has no single fact that points to you as an accomplice in the murder. There's not even a motive. Nothing I can say will have any relevance unless it is supported by you in person. I earnestly hope you have decided to tell your whole story from the witness box.
No, Mr. O'Connor. I'm sorry. I can't do that. I've decided.
The refusal to appear will have a most damaging effect, you know.
Yes, I know. I'm ever so sorry to let you and Mr. Montague down, but I can't. I really can't. I won't tell stories against George.
They aren't stories. They're the truth.
I know. That's why I can't tell them.
You prefer to be hanged for a murder you didn't commit.
Well, it seems to be what people want, doesn't it? I suppose I am better out of the way.
On the contrary, as regards the boy you're trying to protect, you're better acquitted and alive. If you go free, no Home Secretary will allow Wood to hang. The chances of a reprieve are 100 to 1.
There's always that one, isn't there? You see, Mr. O'Connor, neither you nor Mr. Montague yesterday could give me an absolute guarantee on that. And if I'm found guilty with him, then he can still get his reprieve, can't he?
The chances are far less likely.
Oh, I don't think so. Not now I know what they think about me. Anyway, I'm sure they'll never let me go free, Mr. O'Connor, and in a way, they're right. I am responsible.
You are not responsible, Mrs. Rattenbury.
Well, if I hadn't met him, would he be facing a charge of murder?
Now, that cuts both ways. If you hadn't met him, would you?
You're very clever, Mr. O'Connor, and very nice, too, the way you care. And Mr. Montague, he seems to care as if it was something personal. He's such a dear, Mr. Montague. I'm sorry, but I've made up my mind. You two say what you can for me, but I'll say nothing for myself.
I see.
Is it time to go?
No, it's ringing for Montague. Last resort, Montague.
I'd have loved to hope we wouldn't have to use it.
So did I. Montague, you have a visitor for Mrs. Rattenbury?
Yes, sir. Come in.
Hello, Mummy.
Christopher. Oh, Christopher. Oh, you're looking fine, darling. You've grown, too.
Oh, yes, an inch.
I'll never forgive you for this. Never.
He wanted to come.
He was safe up in Hereford with his uncle. And you brought him through that crowd?
Oh, I didn't mind them, Mummy. They didn't mind me either. They didn't know who I was, you see. A reporter asked my name and I told him and he wasn't interested.
Do they know at school?
Oh, yes. But I've told everyone you didn't do anything and he did it all and you were just protecting him. They thought that was jolly sporting of you.
That's all they thought?
Oh, yes. Of course, I told them the truth would all come out at the trial and they'd let you go then. And when you come down to school again and watch me playing cricket like you used to, they won't mind you a bit. Mummy, it's not as if you've been in a real prison. I've told them a remand place is quite different. More like a hotel, I said. And when I told them you got your meals sent in from outside, they were frightfully impressed and wanted to know what the meals were. So I said mushroom soup and smoked salmon and turkey and chocolate nut sundaes, which was all I could think of, but they were frightfully impressed. Really, Mummy, they were, you know.
Little John? Have you seen Little John?
Oh, he doesn't know anything. He thinks you're away on a holiday. Bit slow on the uptake, Little John.
Darling, he's only 6.
I know, one has to make allowances. Anyway, I told him you'll be back at the end of the week, and he's quite happy. No, don't worry about Little John.
No. No, I mustn't.
Mummy, don't cry. It's going to be all right. Mr. O'Connor swore to me it was going to be all right.
Mr. O'Connor shouldn't have done that.
Why not, Mummy? It is going to be all right, isn't it?
Christopher, at school, you have a rule. I mean, not an official rule, but among yourselves. But it's bad, very bad, to tell on someone. Isn't that right?
Sneaking's bad, of course.
There you are.
And you must never do it, except for one thing. Then you must.
What one thing?
If you hurt someone else by not doing it. Someone you're fond of, I mean. Someone you're really fond of.
Like you?
Don't forget Little John, Mummy. He may be only a silly little boy now, but one day he'll grow up, same as me. I don't think I could ever get him to understand, however hard I tried. And then, well, you wouldn't be able to help me, would you?
No. Oh, God.
Time to go, young man.
You're not letting him into the court.
Of course not. He's catching the 10:45 back to Hereford. A solicitor's clerk will see him onto the train.
Goodbye, Mummy.
Goodbye, darling.
Aunt Jane wants you to come up there after the trial. She thinks the rest will do you good.
Thank her.
Mr. O'Connor says the trial should be over by Friday. Shall I tell her you'll come then?
Yes, darling. If I can.
Oh, you can, all right. Mr. O'Connor says you've only got to tell the truth. Isn't that right, Mr. O'Connor?
Perfectly right. Now go with Mr. Montague. Water.
I won't forgive you, you know.
You will, Mrs. Rattenbury, you will. And so will your children. Now you have 10 minutes only. Wardress, help her, would you? Bathe her eyes with something or whatever you do in these cases. I'm very glad, Mrs. Rattenbury. Very, very glad.
George, forgive me.
Alma Victoria Rattenbury and George Alfred Wood, you are charged with the murder of Francis Mawson Rattenbury on 28th March last. Alma Victoria Rattenbury, are you guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
George Alfred Wood, are you guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
Proceed to the swearing of the jury.
My lord.
Madam, I cannot hear you until you have been sworn.
I do not wish to be sworn. I wish to disqualify myself.
On what grounds?
On the grounds of prejudice.
Against both or against one?
Against one. Mrs. Rattenbury.
You know her personally?
No, but I've read about her. And I confess now that I will not be able to judge her case fairly.
Because you do not like what you have read about her, those are not sufficient grounds.
I have a son of nearly the same age as the boy, Wood. And I think that what she has done to him is outrageous.
These are issues still to be tried, madam. Mr. O'Connor, it seems to me, though, that you may have grounds for a challenge propter effectum. You wish to argue it?
What do you think, Montague?
No. She could be useful for your final address regarding the whole question of bias.
Good point.
No challenge, my lord.
Mr. Caswell?
No, my lord. The lady is not admitted to any prejudice against my client.
You must be sworn, then. We find there are no grounds for self-disqualification.
Take the book in your right hand and read what is on this paper, beginning with your name.
I, Edith Amelia Davenport, do solemnly swear by Almighty God that I will well and truly try the issues joined between our sovereign lord the king and the prisoners at the bar, and will give a true verdict according to the evidence.
Now, Miss Riggs, the letter recently read out shows that your relationship with Mrs. Rattenbury was one of the greatest friendships.
Yes.
She addresses you as darling.
But she often used to. Mind you, she was always very friendly with everybody she met.
This is a capital trial. Two people are on trial for their lives. If there is any further laughter, I will have the court cleared. Is that understood? Mr. O'Connor.
During the whole of the 4 years you have belonged to her household, have Mrs. Rattenbury's relations with her husband been perfectly friendly?
Yes.
Hardly a cross word?
Well, never from her.
Sometimes from him?
Well, he'd get a bit short with her sometimes, usually about money.
Just a bit short, not a real quarrel.
Oh, no. No, just a little funny affairs. You know, the way most husbands and wives carry on.
What you might call little tuppenny halfpenny affairs.
Yes.
The suggestion has been made to you by my learned friend that Mr. Rattenbury strongly resented Wood's intrusion into the house. Is that true?
Well, he grumbled a bit. I mean, one more mouth to feed, you know.
But only grumbled. There was no quarrel.
Oh, no.
Now, Miss Riggs, you have known for some time, have you not, that the relations between Mrs. Rattenbury and Wood were those of a woman and her lover?
Yes.
We know what you've already said, Miss Riggs. We saw it on banner headlines at lunch.
It might help the jury to hear it again. They have not seen newspapers at lunch.
My lord, I consider that a most unwarranted and insufferable remark, and...
You asked the question, Mr. O'Connor.
With the deepest respect, my lord, I did not.
Then ask it.
Miss Riggs, was there any mystery about Mrs. Rattenbury's affair with Wood?
None at all.
I submit to you that Mr. Rattenbury both knew what was going on inside his house
and that he accepted it without fuss.
Well, I don't think he even knew.
That is hard to credit, Miss Riggs, in so small a house.
Well, he was deaf in the first place, and then he liked his whiskey at night very regular, and I think it... Well, Mrs. Rattenbury will explain it better. Well, I mean, that is, she's going in the box.
She is going in the box. Go on.
Well, I think he trained himself not to know about these things, if you see what I mean.
You mean he had become indifferent to his wife's infidelities?
Yes, my lord.
Even when they were being performed a few feet above his head?
Well, he didn't think about it at all.
He didn't think about it at all.
Well, it sounds silly, I know.
And now, Miss Riggs, we come to Mrs. Rattenbury's words, if any, to you when she'd been arrested and was being taken to the police station. Did she say anything?
Yes. She said, look after little John and Christopher.
Anything else?
Yes. She whispered to me and said, tell George he must give me the marriage.
George being Wood?
Yes. Oh, I think it was... Tell George he must tell me where he hid the mallet.
You, of course, didn't know what she was speaking about.
Will you tell your story in your own way, constable?
Right, sir. I use my notebook, sir.
Any objections? Use your notebook.
Yes, sir. Acting on instructions received, I proceeded to the Villa Madeira Manor Road, Bournemouth, arriving there at approximately 2 a.m. I was admitted by the prisoner Rattenbury, who was dressed in pyjamas. Her first words were, oh, another lovely policeman. Come on in. There are plenty of other policemen inside, but none as lovely as you. The prisoner Rattenbury then kissed me on the mouth and led me into the house. I took the view that she was under the influence of an intoxicating beverage, identifiable from her breath as whiskey.
Was she drunk, constable?
Well, I would not say drunk, sir, not in the police sense. She was able to articulate. Then she attempted to kiss me once more. I evaded the embrace and cautioned her.
Cautioned her about kissing you?
No, my lord, in the police sense. I said, I cautioned you. You are not obliged to say anything unless you wish to do so, but whatever you do say will be taken down and may be given in evidence. And she replied, I did it. I did it with a mallet. Rats had lived too long. No, my lover did it. Look, I will give you £10. No, that would be bribery, would not it? I will tell you in the morning where the mallet is.
Up to that moment, had a mallet been mentioned?
No, sir. The prisoner continued as follows. He dared me to kill him. I made a proper muddle of it. I thought I was strong enough. Goodness, you are a lovely man. I shall make a better job of it next time. Would you care to come upstairs? And I will show you some things you never knew.
Silence in court.
I declined the invitation and proceeded outside to summon assistance.
You were, in fact, present when a statement was made.
They have a journal on this, and they imagine the headlines tomorrow. Cross-examined on what? Anyway, it won't register. The journalists are rushing out now.
But you can't let it go, sir. You can't.
How long have you been in the force, constable?
10 years, sir.
In those 10 years, you must have attended at many horrifying accidents, car accidents, domestic accidents, fire accidents, some of them perhaps fatal?
Yes, sir.
You must then be familiar with that awesome medical phenomenon known as shock.
I've seen cases of shock, sir.
Severe shock?
Some severe.
How do persons usually behave?
Well, sometimes they're not quite all there.
Not quite all there, not aware of their surroundings or of the identity of people ministering to them?
That is correct, sir.
Sometimes very excited and over-talkative.
Nearly always.
Inclined to weep and to laugh very easily, over-emotional, and generally to behave entirely out of character.
Yes, sir.
Aren't those symptoms exactly what you just described to Mrs. Rattenbury on that dreadful night?
Mrs. Rattenbury was drunk.
You said, sir. She was not.
Well, I said not in the police sense.
No, and not in the medical sense either. Mrs. Rattenbury was in a state of shock, constable, was she not?
I wouldn't know, sir.
Indeed, you would not. Thank you.
This might be a convenient time to adjourn. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, will you please not discuss this case with any of your family or friends? That is most important. You may, of course, discuss it among yourselves.
You have told the court, Inspector Wills, how you charged the accused Alma Rattenbury with the murder of her husband, and how she gave you a statement and read it back to you sitting on her bed. How did her voice seem? Was it slurred and indistinct?
It was strong and most distinct.
Did she make any comment?
Yes, sir. She said, "That is right. I did it deliberately and would do it again."
So now will you read us her statement?
At about 9 p.m. on Sunday the 24th of March, I was playing cards with my husband when he dared me to kill him as he wanted to die. I picked up the mallet. He then said, "You have not the guts to do it." I then hit him with the mallet. I hit the mallet. I would have shot him if I had had a gun. Signed, Alma Rattenbury.
Thank you, Inspector.
Mr. O'Connor?
What time did you first arrive at the Villa Madeira?
It was 3:30 a.m.
Where was Mrs. Rattenbury then?
In bed, sir.
How did you know?
Constable Barfield told me, sir.
Did he tell you why she was in bed?
He said the doctor had been and given her morphia.
Ah. Did you inquire how much morphia?
It didn't concern me, sir.
It didn't concern you? That a woman from whom you were going to take a statement had had a massive, I repeat, massive, dose of morphia a few minutes previously?
She was awake at 8.
Awake? How much awake?
She seemed all right.
Seemed all right to you, impatient to get a statement from her. Did you inquire how much this wretched woman had had to drink that night?
I knew she had had a few.
A few? You didn't bother to find out that she'd had the best part of a bottle of whiskey?
She was perfectly compos mentis at 8:15 that morning.
Really? At 8:15 that morning? Compos mentis? Do you know that the medical officer at Holloway Prison has reported that she was under the influence of morphia and alcohol 3 days later?
No.
3 days later, Inspector? And you say that only some 5 hours later she was capable of making a statement of life and death?
And that's all that I know.
Very well. Now, Mrs. Rattenbury, during these 4 days at the Royal Palace, London, you gave George Alfred Wood some expensive pajamas, and he gave you, I think, a ring.
With my money? I mean, the ring was only a pretense. We both knew that.
Yes, but a pretense of what?
Well, like an engaged couple.
Had he, in fact, proposed marriage?
Not seriously.
But he had mentioned it?
Yes.
Was this at the Royal Palace?
Yes.
What did you say?
I told him it was out of the question. That we were lucky enough as we were, and anyway, we'd have no money to live on. Besides, I said I was fond of rats and wouldn't divorce him for anyone.
How did he take that?
He was angry.
You're just playing about with me, that's all.
That's not true, George. It really isn't.
I don't think I mean anything to you.
Well, what are we doing in this place, then?
Well, you're just being Lady Bountiful. It amuses you.
Lady Bountiful? Oh, really, dear, I'd like to know what I've got to be bountiful with.
You got 250 nicker from him for this, easy enough.
Easy? You call that easy? Getting a fiver out of him is like drawing a tooth.
He must have a lot tucked away.
He hasn't. Just his pension and some savings. Hardly $1,000 a year, I shouldn't think.
Savings? How much savings?
I don't know, dear. You know what I'm like about money.
Well, it'll all come to you when he's dead, won't it?
Ask me another. Anyway, don't be so morbid. I don't like thinking about death.
And then there's the money you get from your songs.
I don't get more than a few bob from my songs, and you know it.
I don't know it. I think you lie to me.
I never have in my life.
You lie to your husband, don't you?
Only to get money for you. And for myself, too. And I don't like it. I hate it.
I think you'd have a fair amount of it if the old boy conked out.
The old boy's not going to conk out.
Funny if he divorced you.
Why should he?
Why should he? You sit in a big posh hotel dining room with your brother.
You're using the wrong fork.
I'll use what fork I like. Your brother, who's also your chauffeur and your lover. It's a wonder Rats hasn't done it before.
I've told you 100 times, Rats doesn't care. He leaves me to lead my life and doesn't bother. I don't think he even knows.
Well, he's got to know this time, hasn't he? You can't go skipping off for 4 days and expect him not to notice anything, can you?
Yes, I can. My husband seems to know nothing about it.
You are asking the jury seriously to believe that your husband did in fact know nothing about this orgy in London?
Yes, I am.
that he didn't even ask how your operation went?
No, he didn't.
An operation that cost him £250.
But he was like that. Mind you, he might have realized that I'd been up to no good, but he just didn't want to know.
You would have us think that life went on quite normally after your return from London.
Well, it did. Little John came over on the Saturday and we went to see my other son play cricket. And then Rats and I played cards and then I went to bed.
With Wood?
Oh, yes, of course.
In your room or in his?
My room.
With little John in bed in the room?
Yes, but he was sound asleep.
With little John...
Have we not recorded that answer? Or is my learned friend at a loss for another question?
I am by no means at a loss for further questions, I think, my learned friend, as he will soon find out.
I am truly glad to hear it. My lord, with deep respect, I would like to entreat a chair for the witness. As your lordship will no doubt have seen, she is in a state of some physical distress.
By all means. Pray bring a chair for the witness. Now, I want to be absolutely fair to you, Mrs. Rattenbury. When Wood in bed with you, with your little boy in the corner...
My lord, have we not had enough of the little boy in the corner?
I have not asked my question yet.
Please ask it, Mr. Croom Johnson.
When Wood told you that night that he'd hit your husband with a mallet, did you believe him?
No, not then.
When you went downstairs and found your husband had indeed been hit on the head, did you believe him then?
Oh, one naturally would, wouldn't you?
You are here to answer my questions, not to ask them of me, madam.
I see. Well, I did believe that George had done it then.
It is my duty to submit to you that you knew Wood had done it because you'd encouraged him to do it. Well?
I'm sorry. Was that a question?
It was a question, Mrs. Rattenbury. And a very important one.
I thought I'd answered it. Dennis, you want it again. I did not plot my husband's death. His death was a great shock to me. I have never in all my life harmed a human being.
You have never harmed a human being?
Not meaning to.
Thank you. I'll only keep you a very few moments more, Mrs. Rattenbury. My learned friend seems surprised at your little boy's sleeping capacity. His cot was at the far end of the room, wasn't it?
Yes, and out of sight.
Was he a good sleeper?
A splendid sleeper. Nothing would waken him.
Mrs. Rattenbury, did you yourself murder your husband?
Oh, no.
Did you know a thing about it until Wood spoke to you in bed?
If I had known, I would have prevented it.
Thank you.
This is a convenient moment to adjourn. We will take the speeches tomorrow.
Mrs. Rattenbury, dear, forgive me saying it, but you don't look at all well.
Don't I?
I don't know why you let these horrid crowds worry you so much.
They don't any longer.
It's the verdict, is it? Well, try not to fuss too much, dear. Of course, that's easy to say, I know, but what I always tell my ladies is...
It isn't the verdict.
What is it, then? It's not him, is it?
No, not anymore.
The children?
I can't seem to feel about them, either. Not what I felt about them when Christopher...
When... Christopher... Oh, you see. You do feel about them just as you always did. This is only a passing phase.
Let it pass. Oh, God, let it pass.
Well, Mrs. Rattenbury, we did very well yesterday.
Did we?
I was very proud of you.
Thank you.
Is there any trouble, Wardress?
No, sir, no. I think we're perhaps a little tired.
And have every right to be. But just remember, Mrs. Rattenbury, your ordeal is nearly over. You have nothing more to do.
Except to listen.
Now, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you may or may not accept it when the accused says that she did not leave this innocent 17-year-old boy to take cocaine.
that I ask you. Have you regard to what you know about the accused, his seducer? Where else would he have learnt this pernicious habit that has now brought him to this grievous pass? He had come to live in a household where there was, on the evidence, a most extraordinary woman. Unbalanced, hysterical, drunken, of abnormal sexual appetite, and apparently of no moral conscience
whatsoever. A woman who, upon her own statement, has been coldly and methodically engaged in lying to her husband about money matters during the whole of their married life, and who then takes unto herself, with no thought for the outcome, a tender youth of 17, hitherto innocent of all vice and immorality.
With a simple upbringing, few friends, and no girlfriend at all. He is flung, at the age of 17, into the vortex of illicit love. And then, suddenly, taken away from his work to live sumptuously at the Royal Palace Hotel, dressed in silk pajamas. And then, brought back to earth, cruelly, you may think, to his drudging duties and submitting to the orders of his mistress's husband. Is it any wonder that such a boy, blinded with sexual jealousy, should not, in some brainstorm, strike murderously at the man whose lawful conjugal rights separate them? Now, one of you, a lady, on entering the jury box, had the great courage of admitting her prejudice against Mrs. Rattenbury before the trial. Now, it is to her and to those who may think like her that I address this passage. If, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you were judging of moral responsibility in this case, your task might be a light one, for you cannot resist nausea and disgust at the way this middle-aged woman has ensnared and degraded this absent.
Oh, no. Not from him.
They have to say these things, dear. It's all a trick. They don't mean them, you know.
They do.
But to that courageous lady, and to all of you, I would say with reverence, let him that is without sin cast the first stone. And mercifully, perhaps, you may say to yourselves, she has been punished enough. Wherever she walks, she will be a figure of shame forever. Let that thought haunt you in your deliberations.
And you may remember that when counsel asked this woman, did you really choose to gratify your adulterous passion in the room in which your little child lay asleep, that she answered, apparently in perfectly good faith, why not? The little chap was asleep. He was a sound sleeper. Well, there it is. That is the woman. A woman who, having ceased to have ordinary relations with her husband, chose as her paramour a boy almost young enough to be her son. That is the woman. A woman who tells you she has lied to and deceived her husband and has gratified her sexual lust without regard for the consequences. Members of the jury, having heard her learned counsel, it may be that you will say that you cannot feel any human sympathy for that woman. Indeed, that you cannot have any feeling except disgust.
Like some of this water, dear. No, thank you. It can't be much longer.
But members of the jury, let me say this. The disgust you may feel for this woman must not, and I repeat that, must not, make you any more ready to convict her of the crime, the only crime with which she is charged, the crime of murder. In fact, it should, if anything, make you less ready, and I will repeat that, less ready to accept such evidence as there may be against her. Prejudice, dislike, disapproval, disgust must have no part in your verdict. That is not the way of English law, of which we are so justly proud.
I think perhaps we've discussed it enough, anyway, to take the first vote. Is that agreeable?
Oh, yes.
By voice, don't you think? So that we can argue it later. Wood first. Mr. Braithwaite.
Guilty.
Mrs. Davenport?
Guilty. But with the strongest possible plea for mercy.
I expect we'll all endorse that.
Yes.
Mr. Donald.
Not guilty.
Mr. Fox.
Guilty.
Mr. Golder.
Guilty.
Mr. Harmon.
Guilty.
Mr. Nutt.
Guilty.
Mr. Macon.
Guilty.
Mr. Sharman.
Guilty.
Mrs. Steen.
Guilty.
Mr. Williams.
Guilty.
And I vote guilty myself. Mr. Donald, the vote runs 11 to 1 against you. Would you care to give your argument?
The boy was led into it by that woman.
In law, that still makes him guilty.
Oh, bother the law.
No, we can't. We're here to administer it.
Well, as you're all against me, I'll have to change then. But under protest, mind.
Very well. Now, now, Mrs. Rattenbury, Mr. Braithwaite.
Guilty.
Mrs. Davenport.
Not guilty. But you said only yesterday.
Mr. Donald, please. How do you vote?
Guilty, of course. Guilty as hell.
Mr. Fox.
Not guilty.
Mr. Golder.
Not guilty.
Mr. Harmon.
Guilty.
Mr. Nutt.
Not guilty.
Mr. Makin.
Not guilty.
Mr. Sharman.
Not guilty.
Mrs. Steen.
Guilty.
Mr. Williams?
Guilty.
And I vote not guilty. That makes 7-5 in favor of acquittal.
Do you realize that you swung the vote in favor of that woman?
It would appear so.
Mrs. Davenport, did I gather from Mr. Donald's remarks that your opinion has swung in Mrs. Rattenborough's favor during the course of this trial? Perhaps you'd like to give the minority your reason?
I'll try. It's true that I loathe and abominate the woman with all my heart. It's true that I believe that for the sake of humanity she would be better dead. But as the judge said, our prejudice against her should make us more careful to find in her favor, not less.
He didn't tell us to acquit her.
He did, Mr. Donald, within the limits that a judge can go. And I've had some legal experience. I voted for Mrs. Rattenbury's acquittal on the charge of murder, which is the only thing we are here to judge. I believe most passionately that she did not kill her husband. And I would like to hear the arguments of Mr. Donald and those who, against all the evidence, believe that she did.
Sir?
Oh, how is she?
I'm very worried, Mr. Montague. I've never seen anything quite so bad.
Is it the verdict that's worrying her? The signs aren't unhopeful.
It's not the verdict, sir.
What is it?
Exhaustion, of course, but it's not just that. She's just sitting there, silent, staring into a corner. You can't get her to speak, not at all.
Oh.
Not even to say thank you, and you know what she's like about that.
You think she needs a doctor?
Oh, I think she needs more than a doctor, sir. If it's guilty, she'll have that, of course. And I expect if it's not guilty, she'll have it too, but it won't be what she needs.
What do you think she needs?
Well, you want it straight, sir?
Please.
To be told that she's a human being.
I can do that.
No, sir. Now, you're connected with this case. So am I. She trusted me once, but she doesn't trust me now.
Who then?
I don't know, sir. I just don't know.
If the verdict is favorable, I've arranged an ambulance to take her to a nursing home.
The crowd will follow it and the report.
She'll be covered up and carried out face down.
That won't fool them.
It's the best we can do. Have everything ready, Wardress, in case.
Very good.
All rise. Members of the jury, are you agreed upon your verdict?
Yes, sir.
Do you find the prisoner George Alfred Wood guilty or not guilty of murder?
Guilty. But we should like to add a rider to that. We strongly recommend him to mercy.
Do you find the prisoner Alma Victoria Rattenbury guilty or not guilty of murder?
Not guilty.
Silence, please. Then you find George Alfred Wood guilty of murder and Alma Victoria Rattenbury not guilty. And that is the verdict of you all?
Yes.
Silence. George Alfred Wood, you stand convicted of murder. Have you anything to say?
Dear, it's all right. You're not guilty.
Have you anything to say?
Nothing at all. Wardress, leave the woman in the dock. She has another charge to answer.
Sorry, dear, my mistake. It won't take a minute.
George Alfred Wood, the jury have convicted you of murder. With a strong recommendation to mercy, this will be forwarded by me to the proper quarters, where it will doubtless receive consideration. My duty now is to pass upon you the only sentence which the law knows for the crime of which you have been convicted. The sentence of the court upon you is that you be taken from this place to a lawful prison and there to a place of execution, and that you there suffer death by hanging, and that your body be afterwards buried within the precincts of the prison in which you shall have been confined before your execution. And may the Lord have mercy on your soul.
Amen.
George. Oh, George.
You silly cow.
Mr. Croom Johnson, there is another indictment against this woman, one of being an accessory after the fact. What course do you propose to take?
In view of the jury's verdict, I propose to offer no evidence on this indictment, and with your lordship's permission to withdraw it altogether.
Very well. Let Alma Victoria Rattenbury be discharged.
Keep the woman inside. I saw her carried out.
Yeah, but face down. You couldn't see her face.
Well, then it must be her.
You can't be sure.
Jan, the hell is smuggled her out.
Have you seen her yet, nurse?
Come and look.
I didn't know where they put her.
She's in here. Wonder what you were all peering at.
The crowd's still up.
Oh, not as many now. They look pretty grim, what's left of them, though, poor thing.
What did you say?
I said, poor thing. And I meant it.
Do you know what she did?
I don't care what she did. You should have seen her face when they carried her in.
Blood pressure's just a little high, but there's nothing seriously wrong.
No.
What you need is rest and sleep. And what I'm prescribing for you will give them to you. Is there anything now you want?
Faces. Could you stop them, Doctor?
Faces? Those are just nurses looking after you.
They aren't looking after me. They're looking at me. There she is. That's her. That's the monster.
I'm sure you're mistaken.
Not guilty, that woman is absurd. I quite agree. I was totally flabbergasted. I can only assume that our Mrs. Davenport is giving way to pressure. She is not naturally a very strong person, I would say. Ah, Mrs. Davenport. Miss Wilkinson.
I recommend the ravigotte de boeuf flamand.
I'll just have the lemon sole.
Will that be enough after your ordeal?
My ordeal? Oh, the verdict. That didn't take us long.
So I saw in the news. 47 minutes only. And then to reach such a surprising verdict.
Did it surprise you?
I would say it has amazed the whole country.
And outraged it.
Funny.
What's the joke, Mrs. Davenport?
That it should be I who have outraged the country. And of course your hotel. Never mind, Miss Wilkinson. I shall be leaving it tomorrow.
Oh, there's no need for that.
There's need for me. I prefer not to outrage people. Thank you, Miss Wilkinson. That'll be all.
Matron says you'd have a nice stiff whiskey. Why, whatever are you doing?
Dressing. The doctor said I could go out.
Did he?
Anyway, I'm a voluntary patient.
I'd better tell Matron.
No, don't. Look, you're the nice one. You've been good to me. Please accept this.
We're not allowed to.
It's a present. That's all. Just for now. I'll be back later on.
Before dark?
Oh, long before that. Just going out to see a film. Cheer myself up, you know.
It's raining.
No, it's clearing. Look, it's clearing to the south.
More tea, miss?
No, thank you.
That'll be 2 and 8 with the tea cake. Thank you, miss.
Thank you.
You know, I'm absolutely sure that was Mrs. Rattenbury. My gosh. First time in my life I've ever got so close to a murderess.
But she isn't a murderess.
Well, that jury must have been out of its collective mind.
It ought to have been that bus at Oxford Circus. With all those people about. I know this place. George and I must have met here once. Yes. He dared me to jump, and I wouldn't. And then he carried me. Yes, of course. Oh, I've no paper left. I must write something. Here are some envelopes. Oh, God, did I bring that knife? Would it be sharp enough? Oh, it's got to be.
George Alfred Wood. As governor of this prison, I'm to advise you that the Home Secretary has considered your application for a reprieve and has recommended that the penalty of death shall be commuted to a sentence of imprisonment for life. I need hardly say that I am most heartily glad.
Yes, sir. Life? How long is that, Warder?
18 years. 12 with good behavior. You'll still be a young lad when you come out.
30. Call that young.
I do. Anyway, you'll be alive, and that's all that matters, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose.
One has to be bold to do this thing. But it's better to die. Beautiful. Alone. Thank God. At last. It's now. Here. And now. Oh, give me the strength, God. And the courage.
Stab wounds, certainly self-inflicted by some sharp instrument. The deceased must have been possessed of great strength of purpose to have inflicted such savage wounds upon herself.
I identified the body as of Alma Victoria Rattenbury, my former employer and friend.
I do not propose to read at this inquest all the documents left behind by the deceased, but there are some extracts that will show with utter certainty that the deceased intended to dispatch herself. Here is one. I want to make it perfectly clear that no one is responsible for my action. I made up my mind on the last day of the trial that if George Wood was sentenced to death, I would not survive him. If only I thought I could help George Wood, I would stay on. But his death sentence is my own, etc., etc. Now this, written on the back of an envelope by that stream, are her very last words.
8 o'clock. After so much running and walking, I have got here. Oh, to see the swans and the spring flowers and to smell them. And how strange that I jumped off the train at Christchurch and came just to this spot where George and I once made love. It is beautiful here. What a lovely world we are in, if only we would let ourselves see it. It must be easier to be hanged than to have to do the job oneself. But that's just my bad luck. Pray God nothing stops me. God bless my children and look after them. One has to be bold to do this thing, but it is better to die. It is beautiful here, and I am alone, and thank God for peace at last.
Having regard to all this evidence, my verdict is as follows. The deceased was found dead on the 22nd of April, 1935, in the River Avon in the parish of Christchurch East. The cause of death was hemorrhage from self-inflicted injuries by some sharp-pointed instrument held in the right hand. And I do say that Alma Victoria Rattenbury, not being of sound mind, did kill herself.
That was Cause Célèbre, a play for radio written by Terence Rattigan and produced by Norman Wright. The part of Alma Rattenbury was played by Diana Dawes, Mrs. Davenport, Gwen Watford, the judge, Carlton Hobbs, Mr. Caswell, Robert Harris, Mr. O'Connor, KC, Noel Johnson, and George Alfred Wood by Robin Brown. The rest of the cast was as follows. Mr. Rattenbury, Hayden Jones, Christopher Rattenbury, Peter Whitman, Mr. Davenport, Peter Williams, Davenport Jr., Gareth Johnson, Mr. Croom Johnson, KC, Peter Pratt, Montague, Michael Deacon, Harvey, Garrard Green, Irene Riggs, Catherine Parr, Joan the Wardress, Betty Bascom, Miss Wilkinson, Polly Murch, Miss Johnson, Cecile Chevreau, Street Girl, Frances Jeter, with Rosalind Adams, Maddie Head, Deborah Page, Michael Burlington, Alan Dudley, Trader Faulkner, Dennis McCarthy, Clifford Norgate, Hector Ross, and Anthony Smee. The newsreader was Alvar Liddell, and the studio managers Patience Pratt, Marcel McCuish, and David Hitchinson. The songs Night Brings Me You and Dark Haired Marie were composed by Alma Rattenbury, and the pianist was Martin Goldstein.